afternoon and welcome back to Condo Craze and HOAs here on 850 WFTL. I'm Karen Curtis and I'm here again today as we are each on Sunday at noon with attorneys Eric Glazer and Scott Shapiro from Glazer & Associates PA, a law firm practicing community association law throughout Florida. As our listeners know, we're here each week to answer all of your calls and emails about the issues that make life in your condominium or HOA absolutely crazy from one minute to the next. As always, we would love to get the phone lines going early, answering all of your questions. So give us a call right here in our studio, 877-850-8585. Again, that's 877-850-8585. Or if you prefer to email us your questions, you may do so by visiting the show's website at condocrazeandhoas.com and by clicking on the email the show tab.
And of course, even if you don't want to send us an email, you should still visit the show's website at condocrazeandhoas.com, where you can listen to all of our past shows. You can sign up for our free seminars. You can see who the show's sponsors are, visit all of their websites. You could link to our Facebook page. You can link to our brand new HOA and condo blog. And again, to check out that new blog that Jan Bergman helped put together from CCFJ, just go to www.hoa-condoblog.com. Again, hoa-condoblog.com. This week's topic was snowbirds. Ooh. And you can also join our email list that is growing and growing, because by doing so, you get copies of all our newsletters and you get other announcements about the show week in and week out. And, of course, if you'd like to call our law firm directly and pick our brains off the air, you can call Glazer & Associates at 855-4-CONDO-CRAZE. Again, 855-4-CONDO-CRAZE. And the law firm's website is at condo-laws.com. Again, that's condo-laws.com. All right, everybody, remember, Florida law now provides that members of a condo board, you have to get certified within 90 days of getting elected to the board. If not, you are suspended. And, in fact, you can even get certified within 1 year of getting elected to the board. And one way of getting certified is by taking the Condo Craze Board Member Certification Course. Again, this is the first course that was written by an attorney and that was approved by the Florida DBPR.
Who was that guy?
Me.
Yay!
Me. Right.
And Eric has now certified over 2,500 Floridians who are now eligible to serve on a Florida condominium board of directors. Why not come see what all the fuss is about?
And listen, if you have a really big board or you just have a lot of people that are interested in taking the course, you can actually get certified at your condo. So, or you can actually come to our law offices, and Eric will teach you there too. So why don't you give us a call if you're interested in that at 855-4-CONDO-CRAZE, and you guys can make arrangements with our office to see the boss put on a show.
All right. Okay. And if you'd like to register for our next seminar at the PM Expo event in Orlando on August 15th, and people are starting to sign up for that already, just go to the show's website at, again, www.condocrazeandhoas.com and fill out the form. Brian, our office manager, will get back to you letting you know that you are confirmed.
Well, the last show we spoke about a Dade County unit that sold for $25 million. How the short sale process works, a great investigation by the Sun Sentinel into the banking industry and how they're helping to actually destroy communities all over Florida, and the responsibility of snowbirds to maintain their unit even when they're up north for the summer.
Yeah, like you said, Karen, last week we spoke about a condo unit in Dade selling for a cool $25 million. But this week, let's start off talking about the most expensive parking space in a condominium ever sold. And the award goes to a condo in Manhattan, of course, at 66 East 11th Street, not too far from my alma mater, NYU, where one owner paid $1 million just to have his own guaranteed parking space condo, believe it or not.
Yeah. You know, and the funny thing about it is he drives a Kia.
Right.
You know? But no, seriously, you know, check out this statistic. The cost of the parking space will be 6 times the national cost of a single-family home.
Yeah. And as they say, only in New York.
Absolutely. It's all relative because, you know, when you hear about this parking spot in Manhattan, kind of makes the Marlins parking problems that we've been complaining about, where you pay $20 for like a no-blocky-blocky parking space. That seems pretty reasonable now, doesn't it?
Hey, $20 for no-blocky-blocky is good. You just pay that $10 for blocky, you're going to be sitting there for 4 hours.
How about we go to our first call of the day, Lorraine from West Palm Beach. How are you, Lorraine?
Yes, good afternoon. I'm fine. Our association has taken like 9 bids to do a roof. They decided a couple of weeks ago on this one roofer. He happens to be the most expensive, will do the less work. In the meantime, not all the board members wanted him. They were just outvoted by one. In the meantime, they found out that he was thrown off the project next to us. The president of the board was forced to resign. That president happens to be our property manager. Mm-hmm. Anyhow, they're ramming this through. They've called a special meeting for Wednesday where they're going to vote on this contract. They're also going to vote on an $8,000 assessment, which is to be paid by this September. How can we stop this? The majority of us do not want this. Can we bring a lawyer into the meeting? What can we do?
Very interesting. Bottom line is, if your board passes this, right, and a contract is signed with this roofer, like it or not, your board is going to be bound to honor that contract with that roofer. Otherwise, that roofer is going to have a lawsuit. Even if your community would go through the recall process now and get that board out of there, that contract had already been signed by your prior board and they had the authority to enter into that contract, that roofer still has a lawsuit. Now, if you're getting what that roofer would be entitled to in that lawsuit is the lost profits that he would have earned had he completed that contract, not the entire amount of the contract. So, again, you got to figure out what those lost profits might be, and it still might be worth it for the association to get out of the contract. We just don't know. You might have to just do the math.
Well, there's something very wrong with the contract. We're calling the state attorney tomorrow to see if he will do anything. On the back end of the contract, there's $330,000, okay, that the association can take 4 years to pay with no interest to the roofer.
Okay.
It doesn't add up, okay? But you're telling us even if we bring an outside lawyer in Wednesday, we can't. There's no way we can stop this vote that's happening.
Absolutely. This is business judgment rule stuff. I mean, as long as I can't really think of any reason, actually, that the unit owners would be able to go in and get some sort of an injunction to prevent the board from entering into this type of a contract.
Yeah, I have to agree with Eric. There's nothing you can do to probably prevent it.
That's
if you find out, you know, after the fact that there was, you know, self-dealing on the part of the directors, you know,
right.
Then you can go after everybody to get the money back. But
okay, does that null and void the contract then?
Would
if
be
we
difficult.
Find out.
It might. Yes, it might void the contract if you can prove that the contractor was in on the scam. Absolutely. But, again, oftentimes difficult, if not impossible, to prove.
Okay. When you said a board member must be certified?
Yes.
What does that mean?
Certified. The law provides that you got to actually get, certified, meaning you either have to take a course that where that cost is authorized to give you a certification in condominium law to serve on a board, or you can actually have a second choice, which is to go on the internet and print out a form that the Florida DBPR puts up and basically says that you're familiar with all your governing documents. Not the statute, but you're familiar with the governing documents, and you have to either print out that form and sign it or take a course within 90 days of getting elected to the board.
Okay.
Otherwise, you're suspended and off the board until you get certified. And on that note, Lorraine, we thank you very much for the call. All right, before we go to our first break, let's keep the New York theme going there for a minute and talk about a judge in New York who denied a condo association's request to prevent a unit owner from smoking in their unit, basically because it seems that there wasn't enough proof that the smoking was creating a nuisance issue to the other unit owners.
Oh, man. I know we've been asked a lot if an association has the right to prevent an owner from smoking in their own home. Certainly, all of you are aware that the association can prevent a unit owner from behavior that, you know, would constitute a nuisance, you know, basically a source of annoyance to any of the other unit owners. If the association can actually prove that the smell of smoke is creating a nuisance or the smoke is causing physical damage to another unit or the common areas, the association may be entitled to an injunction to prevent someone from actually smoking when they're in their own home.
Yeah, I agree, Scott. That's correct. But oftentimes, however, proving a nuisance can be difficult. You know, how do you prove to a court how bad something smells. And rest assured that if you go to court, that defendant may present witnesses in court saying that there is no terrible smell. So really, what's a judge to do? And I remember one time many years ago, I represent an association in a case involving whether somebody's bird was actually creating a nuisance because of all the damn bird calls that were allegedly being made at all hours of the night. And I got to tell you, the funny part, well, I'll never forget about that trial, was watching and listening to all the witnesses imitate the bird calls while they were on the witness stand to prove whether or not the birds were actually a nuisance. I remember sitting there saying, is this really why I went to law school, to listen to these witnesses make bird call noises on the witness stand? Like, what am I doing here?
But can the association's board of directors alone pass a rule that prevents smoking in a unit?
Can they do it by rule? Good question. Probably not. You know, as the board's rulemaking authority, that normally extends only to use of the common areas. But there's more than one way, though, to kind of skin a cat. Suppose, and I'll throw this out to all the listeners, suppose the unit owners in the condo wanted, though, to amend their declaration of condominium to preclude smoking in the condo units. The question is, would that work? And I certainly think so. And I think after we get back from the break, Scott's going to tell us about the Woodside case. And you'll hear it makes it pretty clear that if a supermajority of unit owners in a condo want to create a certain provision to live by, they can pass virtually anything they want. So let's do this. Let's take our first break. And when we get back, we'll talk about anything and everything else that you want to talk about in the condo world. We'll talk about the Woodside case, the differences between amending your declaration and rules and regulations. Taking your calls at 877-850-8585. Again, 877-850-8585. We will be back right after this.
Welcome back to Condo Craze and HOAs here on Big Talk 850. I'm Karen Curtis with attorneys Eric Glazer and Scott Shapiro of Glazer & Associates. The number to call is 877-850-8585, 877-850-8585. And by the way, if you have a product or service that would be beneficial to our listeners and want to be a guest on the show, attend our monthly seminars where you'll meet hundreds of different associations, be listed on the show's website, and have a commercial spot during each week's show, you can become a sponsor of the show. Just visit the show's website at condocrazeandhoas.com and send us a quick email.
All right. Before we went to the break, Scott was going to tell us again about that Woodside case. And as everybody's going to hear, that case makes it pretty clear that if a supermajority of the unit owners in your condo, they want to create a certain provision to live by, they can pass virtually anything they want.
Yeah, and let me tell everybody, when I first started working for Eric over 6 years ago now, I think, on the first day he gave me two things to read. He gave me Florida Statute 718.111, and he gave me the Woodside v. Duran case. And he basically said, kid, just read these two things and know them to do this job. You can make up everything else as you go along.
Which we do.
But right. Just read these two things, right. And that's all you kind of need. So this is a pretty important case. I'd say probably the most important condo case in Florida. Would you agree, Eric?
Yeah, I would think so.
In Woodside Village Condo Association v. Girard, the Florida Supreme Court heard the story of a unit owner who owned four units in a condo and who basically lost the ability to rent those units because the unit owners, the other unit owners that is, voted to amend the declaration to allow only a unit to be rented for 9 months once in a for 9 months in a 12-month period. Mr. Duran sued the association alleging that amendment was illegal. And what happened, Eric?
Yeah, well, after winning actually in the trial court, the guy sued the condo. When he won in the trial court, there was an appeal, and he even won at the District Court of Appeal. But the Florida Supreme Court actually overturned a decision of both lower courts. And they ruled, however, that the amendment, which now limited renting to 9 months in a 12-month period, it was not illegal. And in fact, the Florida Supreme Court made it very clear that there are very few restrictions found in the Florida Condo Act when it comes to amending the declaration, and those are found in Florida Statute 718.110.
Yeah, moreover, the Supreme Court found that Mr. Duran was always on notice that the declaration could be amended, and that this particular amendment does not violate public policy or any of his constitutional rights.
Right. Now, finally, though, the court said that these types of restrictions that are imposed by the amendment to the declaration here, now this I'm quoting the Supreme Court here, these types of restrictions simply come with the unique territory of condominium ownership. Indeed, it's restrictions such as these that distinguish condominium living from rental apartments or single-family residences. Hence, persons acquiring units in condominiums are on constructive notice of the extensive restrictions that go with this unique, and some would say restrictive, form of residential property ownership and living. And I think some people can come up with other words, too.
What's the line that they put in there? I always forget. You're the king of your own castle, except when you live in a condo, doesn't it?
Absolutely, yeah.
So I guess the Florida Supreme Court would certainly say that if the unit owners wanted to vote to amend their declaration to ban smoking in condo units, they would be able to do it.
Well, Karen, there certainly is no constitutional right to smoke in your home, of which I'm aware of. And there also isn't any provision of the Florida statutes which would prevent unit owners from amending their declaration to prevent smoking in units. So again, I say yes, it can absolutely be done. In fact, as the Florida Supreme Court says, unless a unit owner can prove that an amendment violates that statute or their constitutional rights or some public policy, the right of the members to amend their declaration is very far and very wide. But I would like to know today, what do our listeners think? Do you agree with the Florida Supreme Court that, like it or not, restrictions simply come with the territory when deciding to move into a condo? But do you believe that you give up too many freedoms when you choose to live in a Florida condo or even in an HOA? You know, let's suppose there were no restrictions and everybody was basically able to do anything they want with their unit or the common elements. Would you really want to live in that type of community? Give us a call. Let us know what you think. 877-850-8585. Again, 877-850-8585. And while we're on the topic of amendments, let's talk about an issue that rears its ugly head every now and then. And this topic has to deal with just how far the board of directors can go in terms of making rules. Sometimes the board does go way too far when making a rule, and what they were actually required to do was amend their governing documents like the Declaration of Condominium or the Declaration of Covenants.
Yeah, we see this a lot, especially with a lot of places that have had old documents that their excuse is, well, we've always done it this way. But here's the law. If the Declaration of Condominium or Covenants actually grants the owners a certain right, or the right can be inferred from a reading of the documents, the board can't change that provision of the documents by creating a board-made rule, but instead would have to take the more drastic step of getting a supermajority of the unit owners to vote in favor of an amendment to the declaration.
Yeah, and this is an example that I usually give to demonstrate how this works. If the governing documents, let's say, for example, says pets are allowed, the board can't simply make a rule that says pets are not allowed. Can't do that. That would require a vote of the membership and an amendment to the actual Declaration of Condominium or the Declaration of Covenants. And this also comes up often when boards subtly want to have the right to, let's say, screen and reject purchasers and renters. But these rights are nowhere found in the declaration. If the board wants these new rights, again, the documents have to be amended. Okay, that's the lesson for the day. All right, moving on. As we all know, hurricane season just started, and associations spend the whole year worrying about making sure that their insurance is in effect after a storm. You know, should a storm hit, and they got to make sure the premiums are paid. But I got to tell you, this week, the Florida Supreme Court issued an opinion in a case called Chalfante Condominium versus QBE that was a big, big win for the insurance industry here in Florida.
Oh, what another big shocker. The insurance companies win again. Well, in this case, the condo suffered a tremendous amount of storm damage as a result of Hurricane Wilma. The association put in a claim with QBE, but QBA failed to pay the claim. Oh, that never happens.
You're right.
Well, this Chalfante condominium place was able to get a loan in the interim, but was forced to file suit against its carrier. After a jury trial in federal court, the jury returned an $8 million verdict. But then the case was appealed to the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals up there in Atlanta. And that court basically asked the Florida Supreme Court for some help on a little Florida law.
Yeah, and that's right, Scott. The Florida Supreme Court had to answer several questions that were posed to them by the Federal Appeals Court, and they answered them all in favor of QBE, the insurance carrier. And for example, the court ruled that the insurance company did not breach an implied warranty of good faith by failing to investigate a claim in a reasonable time period. They also rejected the association's claim that the carrier was required to pay the claim within 30 days of the court's judgment. Instead, the court held that the insurance company had the right to appeal without paying the condo if they posted a bond. And they also rejected the association's argument that QBE violated Florida law by failing to use certain point and type size fonts in the policy when it came to mentioning the deductible that the association had on their policy.
Well, I take it that some people in the legal community may view this opinion as the court rewarding bad behavior of the insurance carriers.
You are 100% right, Karen. Now, the attorney for the condo association made it clear that he blames QBE for always dragging their feet when it comes to paying hurricane claims. And now, you know, as a result of this court ruling, there's going to be even more feet dragging. And he also thinks that this decision will definitely, unquestionably, no two ways about it, encourage bad behavior by Florida insurance carriers in the future. So, our listeners, welcome to hurricane season here in Florida. Condo owners, even though the season just started, perhaps as a result of this decision, you've already been hit by a storm, even though there hasn't been a named one just yet.
Oh.
Well, maybe the sea one should be called Chalfante when the sea, in fact, does come around. But it is time to take yet another break, taking your calls at 877-850-8585, 877-850-8585, and we will be back right after this.
Welcome back to Condo Craze and HOAs here on 850 WFTL. We're into our second half hour. I'm Karen Curtis with attorneys Eric Glazer and Scott Shapiro from Glazer & Associates. We are taking your phone calls. We want to hear from you. 877-850-8585, 877-850-8585. If you prefer to email us your questions, you can go to the show's website at condocrazeandhoas.com. Click on the Email the Show tab. In fact, we're going to take an email right now from Robert in Palm Beach. He writes, a severely delinquent owner of a condo has declared bankruptcy. Can we dun his renter for fees as we did prior to bankruptcy?
Yeah, for those of you who don't know what dun may refer to, I guess dun means a dunning letter, like a collection letter. So severely delinquent unit owner declares bankruptcy. Can you still send that? Can you send his renter actually a letter saying pay the fees to us, pay the rent to us? And I got to tell you, Robert, I would absolutely suggest that you do not do that. Don't send anything to that renter, because the bottom line is you are attempting to collect a debt that is owed to you, and that violates the provisions of the automatic stay in the bankruptcy. And if the association does not stop that and doesn't get relief from the automatic stay along those lines, I can tell you, you will find yourself hauled off into the bankruptcy court and sitting at the defendant's table, possibly facing an award of sanctions against the condominium association. So be pretty careful. By the way, we had an interesting bankruptcy court case this week where May Eustey in our office, an attorney, went to bankruptcy court, and one of the debtors who live in a condominium has consistently filed bankruptcy over the last 2 years or so. We foreclosed on him in state court. Then they file a bankruptcy petition. The bankruptcy petition gets kicked out.
Is this What's-His-Name with all the units?
Yes, it's What's-His-Name with all the units.
Yeah,
we don't say it right. But the bottom line is, finally, we went back to the bankruptcy court, and the bankruptcy court judge was upset, to say the least. I was going to say something worse than that, but it probably would have been bleeped. But I can tell you, this bankruptcy judge was upset. And actually, we got the court to issue an order that said this defendant is, or this debtor is, precluded from filing a bankruptcy for the next 2 years. The clerk is to ignore the bankruptcy filing. It will not result in any more automatic stays, even if it slips through. So, again, if you can go to court and prove that a debtor continues to file in bad faith, you too can get the bankruptcy court judge, perhaps, to issue an order preventing them from filing further. And on that note, how about we go to Hal in Broward? How are you, Hal?
Fine, thank you. I had a question. I needed some clarification on something that you mentioned earlier. You said that a board can establish rules if they're not specifically talked about in the condo documents and declaration.
Okay, let's start with that.
Okay, can the condo association establish rules governing the use of shutters?
There's a statute that actually governs the use of shutters. That's in 718. So, yeah, you can you need to first start at what the statute says in 718, but then, yeah, the board may be able to select provisions regarding color and style and things of that nature.
You know, when they have to go up and come down and things like that.
Right,
as well.
Exactly. Yeah, that they can
that's
do.
That's exactly what I was referring to, when they can come up and down.
Absolutely.
Can they establish a rule?
Yes, absolutely.
Can
the board establish? Can establish a reasonable rule in that regard. A lot of times you'll find that boards make rules that say, okay, only up within 48 hours of an actual hurricane watch or warning, you know, or something to that effect.
Yeah, because, you know, a lot of those buildings that just people go away for 6 months and they put the shutters down, you know, the neighbors don't like that because it kind of makes the building look like, a prison.
Exactly.
You know?
Okay, but yes.
Okay, follow up. What if you live in a community that has multiple associations? All of the associations have the same basic rule, but none of them are enforcing except one particular association.
What do you mean, what can you do about it? You live in one of the seven or eight that are or aren't enforcing it?
I live in the one that's enforcing it, and all of the others are not enforcing it.
Well, since you are not members of that, you are not a member of that association, probably nothing at all. Nothing that you could do about
it. Each association is free to enforce it or not enforce it as they see fit.
That's right. If it's own association, its own board of directors, that's right. You wouldn't have standing to enforce another association to comply with its own declaration of rules and regulations.
Or right. To claim selective enforcement against yourself.
Right.
Okay.
Okay, appreciate it.
All thanks right, thanks you. Thanks a lot, Hal. All right. Since we're on the topic of storm damages and protecting yourself from disaster, as Hal had brought up, here's another way to avoid devastation that a storm can cause, a little unique and a little extreme, to say the least. If you could actually believe this story, according to an article on Yahoo, tucked beneath the Kansas prairie, luxury condominiums are being built into the shaft of an abandoned missile silo to prepare for doomsday. Isn't that scary?
Oh, boy. Yeah, believe it or not, four buyers have plopped down a total of $7 million for these condo havens to flee to if disaster strikes. They're building indoor farms to grow food, and they're also raising fish and expect to be able to feed 70 people for up to 5 years.
Hmm.
Oh, that sounds pretty depressing, actually. there will be a security system that will be able to use lethal force against people that are trying to break in also.
And the reasons that some of these people gave as their excuse for buying these units are nuts. One guy believes that the solar flares could wipe out the power grid and cause chaos. Others worried about the food shortages, economic collapse, pandemics, and terrorism.
Now, believe it or not, I actually had to go to Kansas about 10 years ago to defend a client of mine in Wichita, Kansas. And it was certainly the first and last time that I've been to Kansas. Now, try to picture
What's wrong
this
with
scene.
Kansas?
Yeah, well, try to picture this scene in your head. Here we are, a little Cuban guy and a little Jewish guy walking down the streets of Wichita, dressed up in suits, while every other guy in the county is wearing jeans and driving a flatbed pickup truck. I got to tell you, I never thought for a minute that we would actually make that three-block walk to the courthouse. But just to tell you how weird Kansas can be. For this missile silo condo story, they got a quote from a professor at the University of Kansas, and he's quoted as saying, "Fear sells better than sex."
Mm-hmm.
Now, apparently men in Kansas would rather live in an abandoned missile silo hundreds of feet underground than actually fool around with their women, I guess. But I'm guessing you wouldn't get the same response from a professor at the University of Miami, Scott.
I'm going to bet you dollars to donuts. The people that actually bought those condo units aren't from Kansas.
Right.
All right. Probably from Bay Ridge, Brooklyn, or wherever you're from, Sheepshead Bay. This professor's also quoted as saying that most people fall for a typical salesman's trap of act now or you're the loser. So, you know, you got to buy these condos or you will die a horrible death in the apocalypse with all the other losers.
Didn't they do that in Sunny Isles, though?
Yeah. You're never going to be able to get a beachfront condo in South Florida unless you buy now.
Exactly. Yeah. But can you imagine what the annual meeting in this underground missile silo association would be like if the unit owners are forced to meet again in a cooped-up missile silo? That's one annual meeting. I got to tell you, I don't want to be at that meeting. Even though the rest of humanity could be completely wiped out, I bet you there would still be fights about that annual meeting about whether or not the condo should prohibit renting. I guarantee you.
Or smoking in the condo.
Yeah, right.
There's also something that bothers me about the world coming to an end. And the only thing that survives is a condominium.
Yeah.
I'm guessing there's a lot of people listening right now who feel the same way.
Well, let's do this before we go further. Let's head into our final break of the hour, taking your calls at 877-850-8585. Again, 877-850-8585. We will be back right after this.
Welcome back to the final segment of Condo Craze and HOAs here on Big Talk 850. I'm Karen Curtis with attorneys Eric Glazer, Scott Shapiro from Glazer & Associates. Taking your phone calls today at 877-850-8585, 877-850-8585. You can email us your questions. Go to the website at condocrazeandhoas.com. Click on the Email the Show tab. In fact, we want to take an email from Beatrice from Miami who wants to know if the owner of the apartment in which I live does not pay the association's fee, can the association do anything to me?
Well, Beatrice, yes, they can. If they follow Florida Statute 718 and give you the proper statutory notice telling you that your landlord has stopped paying assessments and that you must now pay your rent directly to the association, they can. You can be required to pay your rent to the association instead of your landlord. And if you don't, the association will have the right to file an eviction action against you.
Yeah, but you really can't believe what Scott said, because during the break, he just said that LeBron is so great at so many things that he would probably also make a great condo president. You can't really even go by Scott.
Way to go.
Yeah, it's not all bad, Beatrice, though, for the tenant that Scott was telling you. The attorneys at our firm actually recently took a seminar on what's called the Protecting Tenants at Foreclosure Act, which is part of the Helping Families Save Their Homes Act that was passed by the Obama administration. And the act provides a safeguard to those renters that have been faithfully paying their rent against suddenly being thrown out of their residence due to a foreclosure against their landlord. Again, the tenant is actually protected.
Yeah, at a minimum, tenants are now afforded 90 days from the date the new owner obtains title to move out. And in fact, a bona fide tenant, in other words, a tenant who is not the mortgager, child, spouse, or parent of the mortgager and is paying a fair market rent, will be able to live out the entire life of their lease that they had with the original landlord. The only way the tenant has to move out before the expiration of their lease is if the new owner had any intention to move in and use the property as their own primary residence, or if the new owner wants to sell to someone who intends to occupy the property as their primary residence. And in that case, the tenant is still afforded a 90-day minimum period.
Yeah, so it's not as if you're going to get kicked right out into the street. All right, but before we went to the break, our last break, we were talking about that missile silo in Kansas, Scott.
Yeah, that place is crazy.
Yeah, well, last week we were discussing who's responsible for the roof leaks and for the termites, and I'm guessing even the statute in Kansas say nothing about who's responsible if the missile silos leak. Who's going to take care of those?
Right, exactly.
And I'm guessing that these buyers would have a hard time getting elected to the board in any condominium anywhere else on planet Earth. And to say good luck living in your condo missile silo, and remember that the assessments are still due on the first of the month. And if you don't pay, the association can foreclose on that missile silo unit of yours and kick you out of the condo and force you and your family,
into the wasteland.
Into the radiation-infested streets. Now, that's a remedy that should be in 718, huh?
Yeah.
Now, in effect, really a death sentence for failing to pay your condo assessments. But no, Scott, I don't think I can get that passed here in Florida. Absolutely not. All right, quick Las Vegas HOA scandal update. another 14 defendants took guilty pleas, again, in this wide-ranging scheme to fix condo elections with people who would support the filing of construction defect lawsuits. And I think the over and under in Vegas is now like 45 people who are expected to be criminally convicted for their participation in really what is turning into a massive scheme.
But I understand that Nevada isn't the only state in the news this week when it comes to corruption and community associations.
Yeah, that's right, Karen. Guess what? Florida has some corruption, too.
Really?
Where? Yeah. In fact, a former law enforcement officer was arrested for volunteer work he was doing for a Lakeland Homeowners Association for allegedly stealing more than $16,000 of the association's funds for his own use.
Yeah, this, again, a former police officer was charged with illegal use of a credit card, grand theft, scheming to defraud, and making false entries in the association's records. And he was quoted as saying that he did this because he had fallen on hard times. And you have to wonder, though, if the unit owners who had lost their job and were behind in their assessments told this guy that they had fallen on hard times and they need to some time to catch up in their assessments, you'd probably think the association would foreclose anyway, knowing this guy.
And I see that this guy had a debit card that was linked to the association's account that was allowed to have his name on it.
Yeah.
And you think this is a bad idea.
Yeah, no two ways about it. There's two things that actually might be a bad idea here. There's a chance, and again, the articles don't say it, but a lot of associations, or the ones that over the years I've seen have gotten themselves into trouble, is managers who had the authority to accept cash payments for the monthly assessments from the unit owners. Yeah. So anytime you're going to allow anyone at the condo to accept cash payments, it is probably not a good idea because those cash payments sometimes over the years have disappeared, I can tell you that, and unit owners will come in and say, well, what do you mean? I paid it. Sometimes they're smart enough to get a receipt when they make a cash payment. Sometimes they are not smart enough to get a cash receipt, but I can tell you in the associations that I've had some contact with that where the manager has gotten into trouble or the person or the treasurer has gotten into trouble, most of the time it's because the associations have accepted cash payments. And in fact, talking about that credit card, I can't tell you really how many times I heard complaints about board members using the association's credit card or debit card and really not being able to prove that they used it only for association expenses. And in fact, we reported on the show about how other directors in other Florida communities down here have used a card to finance their gambling habit at the Hard Rock. Yeah, it happens.
You know what? It seems they never do. They never pay their attorneys with the card.
That's true. That, right?
Gambling, yeah, that's fine.
Which would be perfectly legal to pay your attorney.
I know.
So I think it's a bad idea. I'm really not even in favor of getting an association credit card. I don't like it. You want to pay for something, you know, every store will accept a check drawn on the association's account.
They do.
And that check should be signed by two people. Again, bad idea, I think, to have a credit card. Let the association pay by check directly to the store or to the vendor. All right. Interesting article on the internet this week that quotes a litigation professor at Rutgers as saying that an increasing number of homeowner associations – check this out — are routinely intimidating, harassing, and fining people who live in their communities, especially the ones who have the nerve to question them about decisions they make.
That's a shocking story.
Isn't that amazing?
Well, yeah. I'm guessing
journalism
this,
at its best.
I'm guessing this professor had his car towed by his own association.
Yeah, or he was foreclosed on for not paying his dues.
Yeah, well, his complaint does bring up the issue of levying fines in a community, and that is a topic that is definitely worth spending some time on. But I think we're going to actually run out of time today, and I don't think I want to start the topic of fines this week because it's something we should deal with next week. And as a matter of fact, we're going to have a legislator on the show, Randy Johnson, next week, that's running for the Florida House of Representatives.
Hell of a left-hander, too.
Yeah, exactly right. It's not the same
the
Randy Johnson, right?
The big unit.
But I think we finally have somebody in our corner that's going to come to the aid of unit owners here in the state of Florida, and that's going to try to get some legislation passed, especially some of the legislation that we have been promoting heavily on the show. Finally, I think we got somebody in our corner. So everybody tune in next week, same time, same channel, and we'll have lots of questions and hopefully lots of answers from Randy. We've had bunches and bunches of politicians on the show before, quite frankly, who have promised us a lot but have come through with absolutely nothing. So I think we're going to hold, hopefully, Randy's feet to the fire next week, and hopefully he's going to tell us exactly what he intends to do in order to make sure that associations throughout Florida stop the bleeding. So it should be an interesting show next week. So, again, tune in same time. Yes, Karen.
Did you want to promote Camp 2012?
Yeah, and again, to see what we're promoting, you might want to go to www.camp2012.net. And on those words, ladies and gentlemen, we will see you next week. Have a great week, everybody.